This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:09 on Tuesday morning, June the 12th. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. She'll be back next week. Yesterday was the first hearing in what could become thousands of cases against the United States government. At issue, did vaccines given to children cause autism, and who is responsible? Millions of children around the world received vaccinations containing the mercury-based preservative thimerosal. The United States government began phasing out its use in 1999 under pressure from advocates, but it's still being used throughout the world. The case now before the court is about whether it's plausible that the vaccine created what some say is an epidemic. The outcome could profoundly change the health of millions around the world. This hour, we look more into the science and the struggle over autism and its causes. Our guests joined us a couple of years ago when his book first came out, and he joins us today too. He's the author of Evidence of Harm: Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic. What questions or comments do you have? Do you think a shot to protect children from one disease could create another? Are you skeptical that mercury could be causing this so-called epidemic? Are you or someone you know living with an autistic child? And do you believe that vaccinations could be the cause? Join our conversation this morning at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Our local number in Madison is 263-1890. 263-1890. And you can also join us via email. The address is talk@wpr.org. And our guest this hour, David Kirby, author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. Good morning, Mr. Kirby.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good so far, but the day is young.
Okay.
Plenty of opportunity. The subject of autism is one that's gotten a lot more press in the last few years. It's been described by some, including yourself at some point, as an epidemic of autism. Is there an epidemic of autism?
I believe there is. Most public health experts I have interviewed or read interviews with believe there is. Even the Centers for Disease Control admits that this is a health emergency, that this is an urgent matter that needs to be addressed. 1 in 150 children is a pretty remarkably common disorder. And if we knew that 1 in 150 children in this country were suddenly going blind or somehow disappearing off the streets of America, we would probably have the National Guard in the street to try to prevent that. This is happening in households all over the country every single day, and it's devastating, and we as a nation really need to figure out what's going on.
What about autism is the term used to describe a range of conditions, including people who have Asperger's syndrome at the high end. They'd be high-functioning autistic. There's a whole range of things. Could you talk about that for just a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is probably the most important discussion to have, to tell you the truth, because this range is so vast, it would suggest that there are almost more than one disease or disorders going on here. If you look at people with, say, Asperger's syndrome, which was popularized in the movie Rain Man, but other people with Asperger's are even higher functioning than that, that they can carry on in social venues. When I look at people with Asperger's, I really wonder if they are have the same disorder as these kids that I profiled in my book, who certainly cannot speak at all, who can barely walk and take care of themselves. They can barely go to the bathroom by themselves, if that. And I ask myself, are we really dealing with more than one quote-unquote autisms? And one day will we be talking about different types of autisms with different types of causes? And even if you look at some of the evidence for heavy metal exposures, at least preliminary data indicates that some people with Asperger's don't show the same heavy metal profile as people with full-blown autism.
Now, that you mentioned heavy metals, and that brings us to kind of the genesis for this program, which is the lawsuit which was filed against the federal government and which is being heard in a special claims court dubbed the vaccine court under the terms of the Federal Tort Claims Act. I actually did some legal research on this yesterday. How did you come on to this idea that the problem with the increasing amount of autism is related to mercury in vaccines? How did you come upon that conclusion?
Well, I have not made that conclusion, and no one has, but I came upon the story, ironically, on the same storyline that is happening today in Washington in the court. Back in November of 2002, the Congress passed a bill, the Homeland Security Act, and in that, at the last minute, was a secret rider slipped in without most members' knowledge that would have dismissed all lawsuits against drug companies for having put this mercury-based preservative for vaccines called thimerosal into American vaccines given to children in this country. And really, what struck me was the secretness with which this was done and the fact that powerful people in the U.S. government were acting in a very furtive way to protect extremely well-funded pharmaceutical companies with great political generosity, let's say. And I just thought that was a very interesting story. I also thought it was quite interesting that there was mercury in vaccines. I had no idea that there was, and that seemed to that surprised me quite a bit. And that got me looking into not only the political connections between the drug industry in this country and members of Congress and the White House and other branches of the government, but also individual families who were struggling to take care of their autistic children, mostly boys. It affects boys 4-to-1. And who were coming to suspect that this mercury in the vaccines may have contributed, sorry, I have dogs here, to the disorder that their children were suffering.
We're at weather time. We'll come back and pick up that point when we return. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock. Good morning. Later on this afternoon, after 3 o'clock, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. June 12th marks the birthday of Anne Frank. After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Emily Auerbach and her guests discuss a young Polish girl who, like Anne Frank, died in a Nazi concentration camp, having left a diary. The diary has just recently come to light, kept all these years by a half-sister living in Israel. Interesting topic this afternoon, Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, here on the Ideas Network. If you would care to join us in our discussion of the possible relationship between mercury and vaccine and autism, you can join us by calling 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also reach us via the Internet, the address talk@wpr.org. And our guest this hour is David Kirby, author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. Well, the case that's being heard in a federal special federal claims court, dubbed the Vaccine Court, has a number of interesting aspects in it in terms of the various pieces of science and research that are being introduced. And one of them has to do with some children who may lack a defense against heavy metal exposure, that some children have built into their genetic structure some things that would defend them against heavy metal exposure, and other children do not, and so it would make them more vulnerable to exposure to things like lead and mercury and so forth that might be in the environment.
Yes, quite a bit of new evidence has emerged in the last year or two. Incidentally, since the Institute of Medicine looked at this in 2004 and ruled against causation, new evidence has emerged in the biomedical field, in those sciences, showing precisely what you said. And again, this science is very young, and we need a lot more work done. But it would appear that many children with autism lack certain defenses against heavy metals that we humans have developed over thousands of years in the form of certain sulfur-based proteins, glutathione being the most common one. sulfur has a natural affinity with mercury and lead and other metals. It binds with them, and then we excrete those metals through feces, urine, and hair. It would appear because of some genetic predisposition, certain children are unable to make sufficient levels of these proteins. These proteins, by the way, are called thiols, and a synonym for thiol is mercaptan, which means in the Latin root for mercury capturer or mercury grabber. So these children seem to have very low or depleted levels of mercury grabbers in their blood, if you will, and we exposed them to copious amounts of mercury in their vaccines, particularly in the 1990s and into the first few years of this decade. And that because those children have what we call an efflux disorder, the theory goes, and because they were unable to excrete that mercury the way typical children were through feces, hair, and urine, that mercury was allowed to accumulate in their bodies, and it was allowed to reach parts of their body where it could do severe damage, whether it's in the brain, which we can talk about, whether it's in the immune system, whether it's in the nervous system, et cetera. And the government lawyer's task, I think, is to try to pick apart this biological evidence piece by piece. It's certainly what they were trying to do yesterday. And also point out that a lot of the studies, the science was done in animal models and test tube studies rather than in human beings. However, a lot of studies have been done lately in autistic children. And Jill James at the University of Arkansas, for example, demonstrated that autistic children have very low levels of glutathione and other mercury capturers.
Now, there are a number of possible sources of mercury in an environment. Coal-fired power plants have been suggested to introduce mercury into the environment. There's a certain amount of naturally occurring mercury in the environment already, there are other ways. There's mercury in switches and thermostats and so forth in most people's homes. How can it be that that vaccines would be the only source of mercury in these children?
Well, they're not, and you make an excellent point, and the epidemiological research that has been produced to refute this theory has looked exclusively at mercury in vaccines. And this research has been criticized. Research done by the CDC has now been criticized by a panel appointed by the NIH. And one of their main criticisms was precisely that. We did not look at background mercury. And we're talking about total body burden level of mercury. Now, there are different types of mercury, and they do seem to do different things in the body. And we are exposed to rising amounts of mercury from the coal industry, both in this country and particularly in China. We worry about, you know, CO2 levels in the world and global warming. Well, most of that pollution also contains mercury in it, and we don't talk about that enough. Our lakes and rivers are polluted, and we can't eat our own freshwater fish. And the other sources, as you mentioned, are widespread. I don't mean to be alarmist. We're not quite yet swimming in mercury, but we are exposed to large amounts. And again, nobody is saying that mercury is the only cause of quote-unquote autism. We need to look at all the environmental contaminants that our children are exposed to and look at which ones have really been increasing in the last 10 or 20 years. One reason mercury in vaccines is such an important suspect is because it was universal. It's near mandatory. Virtually all children receive these vaccines, and not all children received mercury in their vaccines, but those children that did received, you know, on vaccination days many, many, many times over the EPA limit. Safety limit for mercury exposure.
We've got a lot of people who want to join us by phone. Let's get to those calls. We'll go first to Sarah in Plantville. Good morning, Sarah. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have to say that I can't believe that the vaccines would cause autism, simply because it does affect boys on a 4-to-1 basis. It doesn't seem that that would affect boys more if it was the vaccines. I think it's far more likely that what the medical community has done, much like they did with obesity and diabetes, is that they've changed the definition of what makes a diabetic or an obese person or an autistic person, whereas people who merely would have been classified as learning disabled or just slow before are now being classified as autistic. I think that has far more to do with it, with this epidemic, than anything else. I mean, we certainly have created an obesity and diabetes epidemic in this nation in much in the same way, by lowering those limits as to what creates an obese person or a diabetic. And I'll take my comments off there. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, well, I wasn't aware that the definition of obesity and diabetes had been lightened, if you will. I think those two are epidemic because we have lots of fat people in this country, and we have lots of people who seriously have diabetes. Yes, there have been wider criteria, more awareness, more services provided. People who wouldn't have had a diagnosis of particularly the milder forms of autism are being diagnosed today, and that's fueling some of the numbers going up. But we're talking about a jump from 1 or 2 per 10,000 to now 66 per 10,000 or higher, 1 in 150 American kids diagnosed with some form of autism. And if you look at the state of California, they have only tracked so-called full-blown autism, classic full-spectrum autism, which is unmistakable if you've ever seen a child with full-spectrum autism. You will never forget it, and you will recognize all other children in that condition. Those numbers continued to go up year after year after year throughout the 90s and the early, they're actually still going up in the 3 to 5 year old category. So I think that to try to explain away these numbers as simply an artifact of better reporting does a tremendous disservice to the children of this country who are suffering and hurting. And we're not just talking about autism. I'm not saying the vaccines cause this, but we do have children with ADD and ADHD and many, many other learning disabilities. 1 in 6 children now have some type of learning disability in this country. And as far as the 4-to-1 boy-to-girl ratio, to me that would also point out a susceptibility. And some studies have shown that testosterone, again, at least in the test tube, when mixed with mercury, is synergistic and is far more neurotoxic in combination, whereas estrogen would appear to have a protective effect on neurons.
Let's try to sneak in one quick comment here before we go to the news. Colette in River Falls, you're on, and good morning.
Hi, I have 2 children that might be affected, and I'm wondering, my son was born in 1988 and has high-functioning autism, which no one would recognize for anything else other than autism. It's not, well, borderline, as this gal goes thinking, well, the change has been noticed. And I'm wondering if you can mention anything about learning disabilities also, because my second son has severe dyslexia to the point, almost profound dyslexia, even though he's very intelligent. And I wonder if he knows anything, connection between mercury and learning disabilities, too. And I'll take my comment off there. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We'll have to hold the answer until after the news. So let's remember that question, and we'll come back to that and our guest after we hear the news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Autism is the topic under discussion, and the possible relationship between that and vaccines that contained a mercury-based preservative. You can join our conversation, which will continue right after the news. I'm John Munson, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 7:36. Good morning. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. This hour, our topic is the lawsuit over the possible link between mercury preservatives used in vaccine and autism cases in children. And that case began this week in a special federal claims court, the vaccine court as it's been dubbed. And we have with us a guest today who's talking about this. David Kirby is the author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. We might mention that this book is in development by the same people who produced An Inconvenient Truth to be made into a movie. We have an email.
Mr. Kirby, I'd like to read this and then have you respond to it. If the use of preservatives in mercury-based preservatives in vaccines has been phased out, can we expect to see an equally dramatic downturn in cases of autism in the next few years, at least in this country, while the increase continues worldwide?
Yes, and that's a really key question, too. And the question is, should we have seen a decrease by now or not? And when, you know, if we don't see a decrease pretty soon, that's going to be a huge, you know, perhaps fatal blow to this hypothesis. It's a little complicated, but you mentioned that the government said that the mercury should come out of the vaccines back in 1999. I think you said that was done because of pressure from activists. That's a myth. That didn't happen at all. Nobody knew there was mercury in vaccines until 1999, very few people did. It was the federal government itself. The Congress ordered the FDA to add up the amount of mercury in the vaccines, and when they did and realized they were putting kids way over the limit on vaccination days, that's when the statement was issued to remove mercury as soon as possible. Now, that was in July of 1999. Vaccine production sites can't just flip a switch and then suddenly start making mercury-free vaccine. There is a big, long process, and it wasn't until the end of 2001 that all companies had begun to switch over to producing thimerosal-free or greatly reduced formulas. In the meantime, they continued to make mercury-containing vaccines in the 10-dose bottles as a backup so that there wouldn't be any shortages during the transition period. Now, those vaccines have a shelf life of 2-3 years, meaning that many of them, if they were either, none of these were ever recalled. So they remained on the shelves until they were used up or expired, which would have been probably around 2003. There is evidence to suggest that kids were still getting mercury in their vaccines beyond that. And then, of course, we started giving the flu shot to pregnant women and to infant children in this country, which still contains the full amount of mercury. Children are exposed to thimerosal in utero when their pregnant mother gets the flu shot. They get another flu shot at 6 months of age, another one at 7 months of age, and another one at 18 months of age, which altogether adds up to slightly more mercury than they were ever giving to children in the United Kingdom, which has the same autism spectrum disorder rate as the U.S., it would appear. So it was a very, very gradual phase-out, and it would appear there's some evidence to suggest that the CDC itself started buying the mercury-free formula as soon as it was available. Perhaps if your child was vaccinated after 1999 in a public health clinic, there is some evidence to suggest he or she may have been less likely to get mercury vaccines than if they were vaccinated in an HMO or a private practice. Now, I mentioned California. I mentioned the 3- to 5-year-olds. And in the first quarter of 2007, those numbers were still going up. Now, those are kids born in 2000, and let me see if I get this right, I believe 2001 to 2003. That was during the transition period. We simply do not have the data. We simply do not know how much mercury was still circulating in vaccines in California during those years. Now, if we break down the numbers even further and look at the very, very youngest kids, the 3-year-olds, who in this year were born in 2004, there actually is a slight downturn in the first quarter of this year as compared to the first quarter of every year previously in terms of 3-year-olds. Now, it's very small. It could easily be made up in the next quarter. I don't want to, if we, you know, we don't know what this means, but there are other indicators at other HMOs in California that among the youngest children, the rates of autism are coming down.
Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Cynthia in Milwaukee. Good morning, Cynthia. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. I think that this research into the vaccines is very important because as you look at the history of autism, there was a certain point when it just spiked. And in the past, autism used to be diagnosed pretty much from birth, or at least the symptoms were there from birth. And then there was this change to where kids developed normally up until about 3, and all of a sudden, for instance, were developing language and lost it. And I, as a school psychologist since 1976, I have seen a dramatic change in the incidence of autism. It's not just they're identifying it more, or they're not confusing it with learning disabilities. There's very, very different symptoms and ways to diagnose learning disabilities as opposed to autism. There, you know, that's not a very similar kind of disability. And I think the fact that this bill in Congress, the drug companies slipped in this thing, is probably extremely telling in that they know there's something that they put in there that's causing this kind of damage, and I think that it should be pursued.
Well, thank you for your comments. As far as the Homeland bill and charges of collusion and things like that, that's what the movie is really going to focus on. The movie, if it gets made, isn't about whether thimerosal causes autism or not. That's sort of the subcontext. The movie is really about those power relationships and the effect they have on average American families. I'm so glad to hear from a school administrator or an educator, because it does answer the last caller who said, you know, it's just greater awareness. Talk to any person who's been in the school system for 10 or 20 years, and they will tell you that there is a huge group of children moving up through the system with severe disabilities and forms of autism that they had never seen in these kinds of numbers before. And to just pretend that it's always been one in 150, we just never noticed before. And again, you know, where are the 150 adults with autism? Where are the 150 people in Denmark, for example, with autism? They don't exist.
How long was thimerosal used? When did it first start being used in vaccines?
Thimerosal was invented in the 1920s by Eli Lilly and Company, and it started being put in the vaccines in the 1930s. Interestingly, the first cases of autism started to be identified in the late 1930s, and the term was coined in 1943. It was used throughout the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. We all received mercury in our vaccines, but we only received two or three vaccines that contained mercury. And they were stretched out over a longer period of time, and they did not begin at birth, which we now do with the hepatitis B vaccine. It was in 1988 that another vaccine was added to the schedule, and then in 1992, a third mercury-containing vaccine, hepatitis B, was added to the schedule. And those are the years not only that the exposure rates really went through the roof, but kids born in those years, birth cohorts, is when the case rates really started to take off.
We've got another caller who wants to join us, and we'll take that call after we take our weather break. I just want to remind people that we have open lines for you this morning, and you can call in and join our discussion with David Kirby, who's the author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines, and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. Here's how you can participate. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this broadcast, 800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. And on the Internet, our address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 7:46 is our time. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. And after 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller and his guests talk about pet care and health. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk makes one of her regular visits to our microphones. That's after 11 this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the potential connection between mercury used as a preservative in vaccines and its effect in the increase in autism cases being reported in the United States. And our guest is David Kirby, author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines, and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. Well, our phone banks are starting to fill up, and let's go to the phones and hear from some people. We'll talk first to Dennis in Custer. Dennis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have four children that have been through all their immunizations, and you mentioned these mercury grabbers previously, and you mentioned something about sulfur as being one of the ingredients. How can we get these contaminants out of our children's bodies?
Well, this is an area that needs a lot more research as well. You know, one of the natural ways is to try to naturally boost. First of all, I'm not a doctor, and I really don't want to give medical advice. But generally speaking, one way to boost glutathione levels or these levels of sulfur-based proteins is, for example, through a substance called NAC, N-acetylcysteine. It's a precursor to glutathione. You can get it at any health food store. It will help you boost your glutathione levels. I actually take it for eczema, and I find it to be very effective, eczema being an autoimmune response possibly to some type of toxin. What some parents with children with autism are doing now is trying a highly controversial and experimental treatment called chelation, which is the introduction of sulfur-based amino acids. It's far more powerful than just taking glutathione. Excuse me. Now, chelation has been approved by the U.S. government for the removal of lead in adults and children and for the removal of mercury in adults. It has not been approved for the treatment of autism, and that's where it starts to get controversial. There are possible side effects, and it absolutely must be done under strict doctor's supervision and with close monitoring of the child. For example, to make sure that you're not removing essential minerals as well as the harmful metals. But there are clinical trials, at least one currently underway, of chelation therapy for autism. And, you know, there is plenty of anecdotal evidence to show that children who undergo this treatment improve considerably. A lot of them do. I've seen it with my own eyes. And that doesn't necessarily mean that mercury caused their autism, but if we can alleviate some of the symptoms, if we can demonstrate accumulated mercury in their bodies and can find a safe way of removing it, and if that mercury is causing illness and certain symptoms, and we can remove the cause of those symptoms, perhaps the child will improve. That doesn't mean the mercury caused the autism, but it does mean the chelation might be a helpful tool in the future for treating these kids.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Debbie in Milwaukee. Debbie, you're on the air. Good morning. Thanks for calling us.
Good morning. Just two comments. First of all, with regard to the mercury causing autism, that's really been wide research in the scientific community, and they really were not able to find any link between autism and mercury. And the second point I want to make was, I'm a therapist, actually, and I actually have a family member that's been diagnosed with autism. But what happened in the 1990s was Asperger's became widely recognized as in the autism spectrum, and it's a very milder form of autism. And this recognition of this diagnosis significantly raised the numbers of people diagnosed with autism. So I think that has impact on the numbers that we're seeing.
Well, I absolutely agree, but Asperger's is a very small minority of the total number of people with autism and couldn't possibly explain the rapid explosion in the number of cases. And again, pointing to California, those numbers have gone up, but that's only been full-spectrum autism. If you have Asperger's or even milder forms of autism like PDD, you don't get into the system in California, you don't get the services, and you don't get counted. So you can't possibly explain the rise in rates there simply on wider criteria. They don't exist. And by the way, they've looked in California for mental retardation, the theory being that the rate of MR went down in California as autism went up, but that did not hold true either. There was no diagnostic substitution. And I forgot the first part of your comment, but...
Well, that's also quite true,
but you're not looking at all of the research I would submit. And the research that will be presented in the court by these government lawyers, five large population studies, including the U.S. study that took 4 years conducted by the CDC, two in Denmark, one in Sweden, one in the U.K., particularly the U.S. study and the two in Denmark, have been severely criticized by other medical health professionals, including a Blue Ribbon NIH panel that looked at the CDC study and said it was flawed and of limited use in drawing any conclusions. That's Exhibit A that's going to be presented in the court. And the lead author of that study said that the Denmark studies were actually even worse. On the other hand, there is ample evidence on the biomedical side. None of it in and of itself amounts to proof, but taken as a whole, they do present at least a plausible hypothesis for a biological mechanism whereby the direct injection of a known neurotoxin into newborn children might have produced a neurotoxic effect in a small subset of genetically predispositioned children. I think the evidence is still, or the jury is still very much out on that question. No one is saying that thimerosal itself caused the autism epidemic, but these cases before these special masters in court this week, over the next year, will be judged on their own merits, not based on some large population study done in Denmark. So be careful when you say there is no evidence to show a link.
Let's go next to Bill in Holman. Bill, you're on the air. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I was wondering, my daughter has a slight learning disability, and she was immunized in March of 2002, but she also has a condition called morphia right where the injection site was, and I was wondering if they've heard of any links with morphia and the immunization, because I know they call it it was a toxin. They didn't really know what caused it, but has there been any studies showing the link between, like, morphia?
I confess I'm not familiar with that particular condition. I do know that one of the side effects of injection with thimerosal is local soreness and redness around the area of the injection, but that's, you know, typically not permanent. In terms of learning disabilities, also, by the way, March of 2002, it's still very likely that your daughter would have received at least some shots with mercury, maybe not the full battery. But learning disabilities, and one of your earlier callers asked about this and we didn't get to talk about it, I think if anything, the evidence is even stronger to suggest a link between mercury and milder neural developmental disabilities. Certainly studies done in the Faroe Islands have suggested that. We know about Minamata, mothers who ate that severely contaminated seafood gave birth to children with all kinds of different defects. And even in the U.S. study, the risks for things like tics and speech delay and ADD were even greater than the risk for autism, and they were statistically significant. And Dr. Neil Halsey from Johns Hopkins University, who I interviewed for the book, told me he didn't believe that the thimerosal caused autism, but he did think it was possible that some of these milder learning disorders and neurodevelopmental disorders might be linked to thimerosal.
Well, there are a number of potential health risks associated with heavy metal contamination besides autism.
Absolutely. Everything from cerebral palsy to mental retardation. And that's important to remember, too, that, you know, mercury can cause all different kinds of illnesses and symptoms in all different kinds of people. It really depends on the type of mercury. Is it organic or inorganic, methyl or ethyl mercury? It depends on the amount of mercury, the route of exposure, the age of the person, the body weight of the person, and possibly even the gender of the person. And there is literature to suggest that males react to mercury in more severe ways than females.
Let's try to get one more caller in here before the end of the hour, and we'll go next to John in Windsor. John, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I would dispute the autism epidemic. You know, the Shattuck-Durkin study indicated that as the increase in diagnosis of autism rose, the decreased number of disabilities decreased, and that essentially they're the same number as there were 30 years ago. The other issue is that, you know, increase in California, that's because Lovaas was out in California. They had a lot better treatment program out in California, and people moved there. That happened in Wisconsin about 5 years ago. You know, I think that I agree with you about the thimerosal, that we need to study that, but I think that it's really, you got to be careful about this whole thing with autism. There's been a study in Israel indicating that an increase in autism occurs with the age of the parent, and that is the largest study in regards to autism because everybody in Israel was studied. So I think that, you know,
Actually, that's incorrect. It was a very small study. It was Israeli army officers.
Right.
It was done in the 1980s.
Army period, and everybody in Israel belongs, it goes into the army, and they studied everybody.
That may be a contributing factor. I mean, we need to look at everything. I'm not disagreeing with you. But the mental retardation in the state of California, at least, they proved that was not the case. There was no diagnostic substitution. I do believe that a lot of these milder cases are entering the system that wouldn't have been counted as autism before. But if you look at the full-blown cases, I mean, think back when you were in school. Did you know anybody with those kind? Did you know any family dealing with this kind of problem? And now think how many families are dealing. And again, I'm talking about the severe cases, the ones that could never be missed. I am 47 years old. I knew nobody. And I have lived in many, many different places. We moved around when I was a kid. We had lots of friends, knew all the families in our neighborhood. There were no kids with autism secreted away somewhere. Nobody. I mean, you would think I would have at least encountered one.
We're about out of time. The topic this hour has been autism, and this lawsuit is going to move forward. It's going to take a while to conclude, and in the meantime, there'll be a lot more scientific study. Thank you so much, David Kirby, for joining us this hour. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
The program is 612B. It was produced by Leo Duran with on-air production by Christy Taylor, and we thank all of you who called and emailed and otherwise contributed to today's broadcast. If you'd like a copy of it, you can get one at the radio store at 800-747-7444. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.